On today's Question of Faith, what do we tell our children about Santa Claus? Hey everybody, this is Question of Faith. I am Mike Hayes. I am the Young Adult Ministry Director of the Diocese of Cleveland.
And I'm Father Damian Ferentz, the Vicar for Evangelization.
And I'm Frank Olin, Superintendent of Schools for the Diocese of Cleveland.
Welcome. Always good to have you.
Great to be here. Long-time listener and first-time participant here on the podcast.
Yeah. It's good to have you on. Hey, Frank, really quick, before we jump into the question about Santa Claus, I read an article recently that Catholic schools, which you are overseeing the Diocese of Cleveland, fared very, very well during COVID. Can you just talk a little bit about that from the top here?
Definitely, yes. You can never stop me from talking about Catholic schools. And we were bragging a bit on our academic performance and the fact that compared locally and nationally, our kids continued learning and even grew at a time when the national news showed a lot of declines, even in Ohio and throughout the country. But we think they grew in a lot of ways, not just their test scores, which are important to us, but that's not the only reason we exist. You know, we exist to form young people in values and virtues, and those things grew as well for the years that our teachers were really doing everything they could, figuring out every way that they possibly could help kids and their families continue to grow through Catholic education.
That's awesome. So this question today is about Santa Claus and Catholic education. Mike.
Yeah. You're a dad. What do you tell your kids about Santa?
I am a dad. And what I tell my kids about Santa, I think changes depending on their age or actually what they ask about it, right? So I tell them based on my own experience. I think what my wife and I have shared with our kids goes back to early conversations we had when we were new parents or maybe even expecting parents. I recall being uncomfortable with this whole, you know, it's a little bit of a ruse we put over on our toddlers. And like, why are we doing this again? And she was probably more articulate than I can be about it, but really just thought about thinking about where our kids are developmentally. Like these are our high concepts that we celebrate at Christmas and at Easter, for that matter. The two big feasts of the church, we're actually not together in school as a schools guy. They're so important that we don't get together at school. But we share this joy with our children in ways that they can't necessarily grasp the concepts of incarnation, for example. The beauty of the Christmas story is hard for a preschooler or a kindergartner to understand. But this is where the Santa experience comes from, is finding a way for them to experience that unbridled joy, that unconditional love, even regardless of whether they're worthy, you know, whether we're deserving or not, that we experience this generosity. And so from a very early age where kids can't understand what we understand as these higher concepts, that Santa allows us to share in that with them and to share that joy. That's part of what people have referred to as the magic. When I talk to older parents, they're always asking me, you know, how old are your kids now? There's still a little magic in the Christmas season. Mm.
So how do you respond to those who would say, okay, the whole story of Santa is kind of like the story of God. And as you're little, you hear that you believe Santa's real. You grow up, you hear Santa's not real. And so a lot of atheists will say, well, that's the same thing. When you're younger, in order to understand reality and make some sense, you have to believe that there's a God. But then as you get older, you realize, no, that's just like the Santa Claus story. So they make that analogy and for that reason think, well, this isn't a good thing to share. So you talked a little bit about developmental processes of young people. So how do you make those connections? And obviously practicing Catholic. So how do you bring that all together for your children?
That's a great question, and one that I'm definitely sensitive to, and probably one that I was thinking about in this long ago conversation with my wife now, that I'm a fear of exactly that thing. But it's really it is really engaging with our young people, and I'll talk about my kids. Mm-hmm. I'm used to talking about young people in general, but in that understanding, what I articulated, that they can't understand it when they're younger. And if we go through our phases of development, there's all kinds of stage theories of development. But as we go from not being able to understand abstract concepts and things to moving along that way, we need to actually dialogue with them about it. I think that, well, I was worried that exactly as you said, I thought, well, there's we tell them this is all this goodness is from Santa Claus. Turns out that Santa wasn't bringing those presents under the tree. That's all nonsense, and they reject it all. And you worry that that'll be applied to theology, mm-hmm. to their own faith. But it's really about engaging these ways of knowing. There is no faith without doubt. But the ability for kids to go through this journey and think, and if I parallel to like the conversation with I'll talk about one of my kids who was really kind of distraught about this. I don't know how you all came to the realization, but hers was a little more jarring than others, and really felt like you know, what were you doing all this time? I can't believe you did this to me. And we had that. It was probably one of the more emotional and memorable conversations of her life for me with her at this point. She's just talking about like what let's unpack now. What was true? This generosity, you know, where did it come from? Well, you said it was Santa Claus, but it was really, really all you. Well, now what is Santa Claus? And so we got to Santa's representation of this generosity and this kindness. And she, being in a Catholic household, going to a Catholic school, she knows the real reason we celebrate Christmas. And so I brought that back to, you know, why do we give gifts at all? And so we talked about the nativity and the fact that this is a way as young people to understand it. And it helps that she's in the older part of our brood, so that, you know, we've got younger ones that really I kind of invited her to we're all Santa Claus now. You know, for your younger brother, your younger sister, they're experiencing that joy. We're helping create that joy. We're helping them feel that love. But I think it's so important that we have this conversation about how it points back to the meaning of Christmas and to the nativity of Jesus. Because, I think of the disaffiliation research that's out there on Catholic participation in general. One of the findings, in addition to the young age at which people disaffiliate around 13 or so, is also the finding that when they disaffiliate, it's because their understanding of the faith is at a low level, like a second, third grade kind of level. So as kids get older and we examine this question, if we just sort of sweep it on the rug and say, oh, yeah, it was just a fun thing we did, we won't have that. Mm-hmm. We won't advance that understanding. But when we actually talk about it and say, well, this is why we did it, and your mom and I actually talked about it. We know you. We know how you perceive the world, and we thought this was a good way to approach Christmas and the nativity with you, and now we do this as a family, and you're part of something greater. I thought it was really one of the most special conversations I've had with her.
That's cool. I remember my parents made a big deal of St. Nicholas Day. So we always put our shoes out and our stockings out on St. Nicholas Day, and he was a saint, and my mom used to talk about St. Nicholas as a saint. And somehow I understood a relation between St. Nicholas and Santa Claus until one day, I think I was 7, my brother showed me he found the presents, and he's like, look, that's mom's handwriting. So I was a bit confused by the thing. That's what an older brother does. But I also remember my mom and dad saying that, yes, they were the ones giving gifts, but it's the spirit of St. Nicholas, who is a saint and following Jesus. And I also remember having a statue in our living room. So we had our nativity scene, and my brother and I would take turns bringing down a different figurine every day during Advent. So that was all part of it. And then we had a great statue of baby Jesus and Santa Claus kneeling in front of Jesus. And so in the Ferentz home, these things were intimately connected, as you're saying. And as I was developing, I wasn't disassociating my intellectual life from my life of faith. They were kind of coming together, but in a mysterious way, you know? So I don't know. How did it come for you, Mike?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm trying to remember, actually. I remember that my mother came into my room one time and said, you don't still believe in the Easter Bunny, do you? And I was like, no, kind of thing. And then I cried for like a half an hour, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that sort of was the lead in to Santa for the next year. But for our family, I would say, like, I think we kind of always knew, you know, I'd hear mom and dad creeping around in the apartment, bringing presents out in the middle of the night, you know, when I was sleeping. So I kind of had an idea that this was all a ruse. But I would say that the concepts were not necessarily disconnected, but certainly different. So, like, mm-hmm. my mom would say, well, you know, Jesus is why we're celebrating. Mm-hmm. And she was like, and that's why we put the manger together as a family, and that's why we go to church on Christmas and all these things. And she'd say, but Santa is something extra that kind of reminds us that God loves us. And she would tell me about St. Nicholas also. And St. Nicholas was really adamant about that. She would say to me once, and she'd say, he wanted to make sure people who had nothing understood that they were loved. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and so I kind of was able to put those things together, I think. And I think, as you said, it didn't harm my intellect in terms of, oh, well, none of this makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, no, this makes perfect sense now. I get it totally. And, you know, I think that's one of the issues that goes around, right, is that people divorce these things completely. And they say, well, it's either all Santa and all fake, or all Jesus and the heck with Santa, mm-hmm. and then you get into all kinds of problems.
Yeah,
I totally agree. That feels like, you know, the work of Christmas has changed as a parent, at least over my years. When the kids were little, you know, the work was staying up until the wee hours, putting together dollhouses and kid furniture. But now the work is really focusing on what does this all mean, and it's. Making sure that Christmas morning is about gratitude, not entitlement, that we're central to the Christmas story. Your focus on, like, what are the rituals? Mm-hmm. You know, the rituals. If you listen to the department store culture, the rituals are, you know, get more and more. But our rituals have to be about. We also have the manger. We also have the tree, which was, you know, historically was baptized by the church. The old Christmas trees out of, you know, Saturnalia. These were not next to the actual manger in Bethlehem, but but that we've taken that tradition and that ritual, brought it into our faith. And
we've baptized those. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. That's how I think of. That's how I try to think of Santa anyway. I try to live that.
Yeah, and then engaging, as you said, in discussion with your children about all these important things. That's parents, when their children are baptized, are told to be the first and best teachers of your children in the ways of faith. And so it is true that young children are not able to think abstractly, so it's hard for them to understand the incarnation and God becoming man, but they can certainly understand Mary had a baby, and this baby we call God, and the angels came. So getting to know that story, and then that the Santa Claus story isn't apart from that. Like Mike, you were saying, the relation of this generosity that's given and the mystery of how this is all done, it encourages the mind to wonder and to expand and to engage imagination. So there's an opening of oneself that's possible here if done the right way. Those two things are not mutually exclusive, right? In a good Catholic home, you can do them.
Was it a tradition in either of your houses that you had to give one of your gifts away? This was not a tradition in my house, but my friend, they would get a bunch of Christmas gifts, and they would say, okay, you have to choose one of those gifts now, and you have to give that to someone else.
Nope, you didn't do that.
I was like, man, that's gonna cause a firestorm, you know. But my friend this was his family tradition. He said, you know, it was one of the best things for me. He said, I realized that we were well off, he said, and that we had a great abundance of things, and that I was now called to share that abundance with others.
Yeah.
And so he said that you couldn't open the gift. You couldn't like open all your gifts and say, well, these socks I don't want, you know.
Yes. It was like
you had to just pick a gift from under the tree and say, this is the thing I'm going to give away. Mm. And he said, and then you didn't know what it was, really. He said, you just gave it away. He said, and if it was something that you asked for, you didn't get, you're like, oh, it's probably that.
I was rather selfish as a child. We got to open one gift on Christmas Eve before midnight mass, and then we had to come back and go to bed. And then, of course, my brother and I would wake up early and be in our PJs opening the gifts.
Yeah, that was more of my tradition, too.
I probably, now thinking of it, I should give gifts away like that. But, it's different when you're 46 and when you're 6.
Well, that's a great example, though, too, of all the traditions and of all the ritual. I mean that in the broadest sense of all the ritual that emerges around Christmas. What are we going to emphasize at home? You know, what are we emphasizing with our families, with our communities? That's a great example of something we haven't. It wasn't part of our family's tradition, but it sounds like Yeah, that sounds interesting.
The biggest thing on my college campus when I was a student was give a child a Christmas. And we just had to go out and buy like one or two gifts for kids. And then we'd have all these kids from the South Bronx come for a big party and they would get the gifts. Mm-hmm. And always amazing things happened. Like there was one girl that said, "Yeah, I don't believe in Santa Claus and I'm not going to get what I wanted." And we said, "Well, what do you want?" And she said, "A teddy bear." And we had this big, huge teddy bear in the closet that was literally right behind her. I mean, you couldn't make this up, right? And the guy who was playing Santa Claus goes, "Come here." And he, like, opens the door, and here's this giant teddy bear. And she was, like, starts hugging it and everything else. I was like, this is really a great thing. Yeah. We just had so much fun doing it every year.
Yeah, a lot of parishes have, like, a giving tree where you can grab a tag and buy a gift, and then that's given to someone in need. I was thinking, too, Frank, just before we conclude this conversation, one of the things that I think can be unhelpful is when people start thinking of God like Santa Claus. So when Santa Claus is coming to town, so he knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. In Christianity, we're all sinners and we all need a savior. So even if you haven't been good and even if you've been struggling with sin, that's exactly why God became one of us. And that's why the incarnation happened, so he can save us from our sin. And that's why he's born not in a palace or in a sterile hospital room, but in very chaotic conditions, because that's the condition of the human person. And he wants to be born into our hearts. And Santa is there adoring Jesus for that reason. And Santa means holy, so Holy Claus, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, sorry, yeah. I had to say that.
No, that's great.
Yeah, beautifully feel said. Like a parent.
Yeah, exactly.
Having to assert these things.
So it's been fun. So, Frank, thanks for all your hard work in Catholic schools, too. I know it's not an easy job, and thanks for making our Catholic schools as good as they are.
And Frank, go on.
I just get to be the face of it. It's a privilege to lead the system. We have so many great leaders and teachers and educators, pastors, parishes. But thank you. Thanks for that, and thanks to all of them.
And in our diocese, too, you just reported recently that for the second year in a row, we have increased enrollment in our Catholic schools.
We do have more kids educated in Catholic schools this year than last year. The numbers are just in from our October counts, and we're excited about that. We're excited, especially in the grades, we're seeing growth and to continue that trajectory.
Yep. That's excellent.
That's awesome. Frank, where's your home parish? Where do you go to church?
St. Angelo Merici.
Ah, tell us about that. What do you like about St. Angelo Merici?
Oh, it's a wonderful parish. It's got great culture in the school. It's got great involvement in the parish, wonderful pastoral leadership from Father Lanning. And in fact, my wife and I, for a long time, were involved in the pre-Cana ministry there. There's so many ministries that are led by the lay people of the parish and really serve the whole community. A great Catholic school environment, great culture, wonderful foundation too. Our oldest is in high school now at St. Joseph Academy and doing well.
Cool. And Father Don Dunson, a son of the parish,
yes,
is also your parochial vicar.
Vicar. Yes. Oh, he's incredible. Yes.
One of my professors at the seminary. Brother, thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Love Father Don.
I used to like my classmate Mark was in his class, and he gave an answer to a question, and Father Dunson said, "That's a wonderful answer, but wrong." So, Father Dunston, pray for us, and we'll pray for you. And our gospel for the third Sunday of Advent. By the way, the whole time we've been talking, we forgot to mention one thing. It's St. Nicholas Day that we're putting this podcast
up. Happy St. Nicholas Day.
So happy
Hopefully
St. Nicholas,
you got some
everybody.
Good things in your shoe.
Yeah. And our gospel for the third Sunday of Advent is from Matthew. When John the Baptist heard in prison of the works of the Christ, he sent his disciples to Jesus with this question: "Are you the one who is to come, or should we look for another?"
Yeah. I find the most interesting part about this gospel, that lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and you would think the poor get rich, but it's actually the poor have the good news proclaimed to them. So obviously we're called as Catholic Christians to assist the poor materially, but as Pope Francis says, that the spiritual feeding of the poor is also important.
That's right.
So it's a both and kind of thing.
We used to say, poor people and sick people are sick, but then they get depressed because of their situation and they get sicker. And our job is to alleviate that in some way. So,
spiritually and materially.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's the third Sunday of Advent and Gaudete Sunday. So happy Gaudete.
Wear some rose.
Folks, wear rose-colored vestments this week. So pay attention at Mass and you'll notice all those things. Frank and Lynn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and Merry Christmas if we don't see you. And we'll have all this and more next time here on Question of Faith.